A podcast of the cinema.
Good afternoon, husband and co-host Alonzo Duralde.
Thank you, husband and co-host Dave White.
You're the film reviews editor at therap.com. You co-host multiple other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast All Day, Deck the Hallmark, A Film in a Movie, and the show formerly known as Who Shot Ya, now temporarily and currently known as the untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project.
Correct.
Y'all are changing your name.
Yes.
And you're going to have the Maximum Fun subscribers help you do it?
Yes.
Is that what's going to happen?
They just announced today Max Fun Drive starts on May 3rd, and part of the... We don't know what it's going to be yet, but that is somehow going to tie into listeners helping us pick a new name.
Cool.
I wish this apartment were cool.
Don't start complaining now.
I'm feeling very Tennessee Williams right now.
No, you're not.
It's a little warm.
No,
little warm in here.
No, you're not feeling that way, and I'm going to tell you why you're not feeling that way. I'm going to tell you how you feel.
Please, mansplain me.
I will. Because this is springtime in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and that means sometimes we have warmer days than some other days,
yeah.
You see. Normally, Alonzo, springtime in Los Angeles, the temperature hovers around a very temperate 65 to 72 degrees as a daytime high.
Mm-hmm.
Nighttime lows somewhere in the, 50s. Sometimes the low 50s, and you go, ooh, chilly, you see.
I might need a light wrap.
And then, some days like today, there's this little surge of a warm wave where the temperature is like, oh, suddenly it's like 83. And you feel, oh, no, oh,
I'm melting.
I'm sweating so much. Now, here's the deal with you. You don't really do that very much. I am the one who gets very hot, but you know what? I pre-prepared my mind, you see, knowing that this little surge of a warm wave was coming. To that end, I have opened up all the windows, turned on the ceiling fan. Listeners with dog-like hearing will hear the ceiling fan going, the outside street noise coming in through the open sliding glass door. Everything's okay. The summer is not here yet.
I know.
And
I'm already uncomfortable.
We will have a few days like this until the end of June, but otherwise we will have normal temperatures. Highs in the mid-60s to low 70s. Nighttime lows in the 50s.
I get spoiled by the winter, and then I temporarily forget where
I would like
I live.
To inform you of one other thing. Los Angeles has no winter.
I know.
There is simply cooler temperatures.
Yes.
There is what you and I like to call Los Angeles winter, which means
Chicago summer.
Yeah, at night, it'll be like maybe if it's like the Christmas miracle, like 36 at night. And then in the daytime, it'll be, ooh, the 50s or 60s. Where's my windbreaker? You see people bundled up in these puffy coats.
The people who don't have the
mittens and stuff.
Who don't have their own insulation the way we do. It's like, out come the scarves.
You just need to calm down. I'm telling you.
I am momentarily uncomfortable, and so the world must hear about my complaints.
How was your drive around the neighborhood?
I was fine.
You just came back, and I didn't get a chance to ask you while we were hanging laundry.
Yes, it was the weekly, let's start the car so it doesn't die in the garage, drive around the neighborhood. Nothing much to report, really. You know,
did you see Angeline?
Did not see Angeline.
Did you see the naked guy on the bike with the bra and the panties?
No, nope.
He's one of my favorites.
Yes. He is a neighborhood character, if you will. but I did see that, that as reported to us by our friends at Sunday Zoom Dinner, Basics is indeed closed.
Forever closed? Permanently closed?
It's looking that way. I don't know. Maybe they haven't taken the signage down or anything.
Right.
But there's a lot of things on the front door.
Boarded up and whatnot. That was a neighborhood institution.
Mm-hmm.
That was there before we ever even lived here.
Yeah, and a thriving patio business. So you'd think they would have.
It was here, I think, like since the 80s, right?
Probably, yeah. I think so.
Wasn't that? Oh, no, that's Merrick's was behind them.
Right.
Same company.
Is it?
Same owners?
I don't know.
I think so.
Could be.
I just always remember when we first moved to Los Angeles, someone saying, Jennifer Aniston loves Merrick's.
That's right.
And I was always like, why? I ate there once.
Because she's never lived in Texas.
Not amazing. Very popular.
Sure.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't want all the neighborhood restaurants to go away, even if I never eat in them.
Right. No, it's the thought of it. It's the principle of the thing.
Brr. Well, guess what?
What?
We're here to discuss cinema.
Yes, we are. It's our job.
It's my only job at the moment. For a whole year now, this has been my only job. And we have four films to talk about and one film to remind you exists.
Okay.
If you remember, how many months ago was it now? Two? Three? We talked about the documentary Gunda.
Ah, yes.
G-U-N-D-A. It's the one that has no dialogue, nobody talking. It's not silent because there are noises.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there
are no human beings.
There are not human noises, and they are pig noises and nature noises and
chickens and cows.
Clucking chicken noises, and yeah. It's about a pig on a farm. And you are at a ground-eye view of this pig. They have assigned the name Gunda to this pig. I don't know if the name Gunda has a meaning. I don't know if the owners of the pig named it Gunda. I don't know if this is a Disney nature situation where they just anthropomorphize, you know, animals. There's no narration, though.
Yeah.
No narration, and therefore, you don't get a charming story being told to you by Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, or Tina Fey.
You get the pig.
You get pig sounds.
Doing the thing. It is really great. And we jumped the gun on it when we reviewed it because it had had an Academy qualifying run in December.
Yes.
And we didn't quite realize that that was not its actual opening.
Yeah.
So we talked about it, I guess, sometime in January or February. And then is it nominated for anything?
It did not get an
Academy Award nomination. But now it's finally opening. Streaming or theaters?
Theaters only at the moment.
Wow.
It'll be streaming soonish, I imagine.
It's really great. Give it a shot. If you're in a place where you can safely go to a movie theater and you've been vaccinated and the theater's being good about, you know, keeping everybody safe, we're no longer going to tell you not to go to a movie theater.
No.
We're going to tell you to go to a movie theater with extreme caution.
Yes.
Meaning, get that shot or shots and make sure that theater is doing you right.
Spaced.
Yeah.
You know, don't get up in other people's business.
No.
Wear that mask.
Oh, people will definitely need to be staying out of my business when we finally begin going places in about 3 weeks.
Mm.
One more, like, yeah.
Yeah.
A little less than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I don't know. I guess.
Listen, here's what's going to happen. On May 8th, we're going to get up. We're going to put on our masks.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to march down the block to the donut shop that we have not been to in 14 months.
Mm.
Very small place. Going inside, treacherous. if there are too many people around you. And we're going to go. We're going to do it. We're going to get those donuts. We're going to bring them back home. That will be our first venture out into the world as citizens of this great city.
Yes. We'll see how that goes.
I'm pretty excited about it, mostly because of donuts.
Well, sure. Talk about, you know, classic carrot stick.
But I will, I'll deliver fists of fury if anyone is in my way. Well, by in my way, I mean being bad in my way.
Sure.
If I see you're going to get in my way, I will simply swerve and relocate myself without any complaint toward you.
Right. Yeah, somebody I know said on Facebook about how he was walking, but he wasn't near anybody and he wasn't wearing a mask, and somebody scolded him. And I was like, yeah, they should. Because you don't know who's going to come hopping out of a door.
Right.
You don't know who's going to open some shop, you know,
Frogger
entrance and careen out into your path.
Right.
You got to be
That's
ready.
That's right. You got to be, listen, what if the daytime killer begins
Maybe
chasing
not
you?
The daytime killer. Maybe,
anything could happen.
What if just the daytime rando happens to, you know, emerge onto the sidewalk the way that people emerge onto sidewalks?
Well, you know what? That could be the daytime killer.
Yes, David, could be the daytime killer. But it doesn't have to be the daytime killer to be relevant to this conversation. You just take every conversation to the daytime killer. All of them.
I like precautions.
What's for dinner tonight? Oh, I don't know. What would the daytime killer want?
No. That we would have? I like to take a reasonable amount of precaution. The door stays locked if we're in our home. If you're taking the car out for the weekly drive to keep it rolling, you have to take your license and your Kaiser card and your insurance card. What if you have a heart attack while you're driving? They'll need to know where to take you. You won't call me. There'll just be an ambulance show up taking you somewhere.
You
gotta have your Kaiser card.
You're my emergency contact.
Do you remember in the film Airport 1975 when the man drove a little plane into the big plane and because he had a heart attack? Guess what he didn't have on him? His insurance card. They couldn't get him to the Sky Hospital in time. He died.
That is the worst example.
Nope. It's true.
He dies of a heart attack in a tiny plane, and he hits the big plane, but his insurance card has nothing to do with anything.
I could have helped him.
You know who that was, by the way?
Wasn't it like Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. or someone, or was it the senior Ephraim Zimbalist?
Is there an Ephraim Zimbalist Sr.?
I don't
no
know.
Idea.
Which one? Who was it?
Dana Andrews.
Oh, it was Dana Andrews. I forgot about that.
Who plays a like hotshot pilot in The Best Years of Our Lives.
That is correct. He's also in Lawyer. He's also in Laura, sort.
He's in Lawyer? What?
Sorry. Laura.
Laura. Yes, he is.
Looking real handsome. All the time.
Yeah.
I forgot that was him in Airport 1975. We're fixing to rewatch that movie. We just watched Airport, the OG.
Yes.
The other night. And
all four Airport movies are currently streaming on Tubi
with commercials, so it's really just like watching television.
It's like watching the ABC Sunday Night Movie in 1974.
All right, so
except you have to watch those stupid Instacart ads over and over again.
Gunda.
Yes.
Gunda. That's number one.
Yes.
The next one sounds like Gunda. It's called Monday. Take it away.
Wow. Okay, so Monday stars Sebastian Stan and Denise Goff. They are both American expats living in Greece. She is a lawyer.
And she has something to do.
Yes, she's getting out of a terrible relationship and is drunk and rebounding when she meets him. He looks like Sebastian Stan, so of course she's like...
He's having a good time.
Yeah, she's immediately down for that. They wake up drunk the next morning, naked on a beach. That's kind of a meet cute, I guess. And even though she is planning to head back to America, he like goes full rom-com and shows up at the airport and talks her out of it. And this all happens in the first 10 minutes. Then they have to figure out what their relationship is going to be now that they have like fallen into each other's arms and are having great sex, but have but have nothing else in common.
No, they don't.
And it does not go well, as you might imagine. And they wind up just sort of having to chase the dragon of their physical attraction because it's really all they've got. And yeah, he's somebody who you know, just kind of drifts around, was in a band, left when they were getting successful, you know, like has a kid he never sees. And she is sort of trying to like make this thing work, but it's just getting worse because they just should not be together. This is a movie that caught me by surprise because like the first half hour you think, okay, this is going to be a movie about like two attractive people having a lot of photogenic sex,
right,
in
you think it's
sun-dappled
like
locales.
Sunny sex movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, no. The people that look so good having sex together should not be a couple.
They should not be a couple.
No, they should not.
This is it is a film about the tragedy of heterosexuality.
Go on.
No, that's it. It's about what a sad, distorted lifestyle it is.
You could do this exact same movie with two dudes or two ladies, and it would be just as tragic.
It's from a director whose name I'm terribly sorry that I'm about to destroy, although I have practiced in good faith, Argyris Papadimitropoulos.
I believe that's the same thing.
All right. So, really, this is actually a horror movie. because it could happen to anyone, you know? You find yourself physically smitten with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because maybe you don't have anything else going on, you think, why not? What if?
And to be clear, you know,
let's give it a shot.
This whole movie isn't like, oh, she's so great and he's so terrible.
No.
She's got problems.
They are both not fully operational.
Yeah, let's say their baggage matches for a while.
Yeah.
Until it doesn't.
And decisions and choices are made that a more calm, rational person sitting in the audience would think, this is probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
What y'all are fixing to do. And then they do it. And it turns out you were right.
They throw a party at one point so that her friends can meet his friends. And we discover that his friends think that her friends are awful, soulless yuppies.
They are.
And his friends think that her friends think that his friends are like gross man babies.
They are.
And yes, they're both correct.
Everyone's right.
They are all right, and they should not be at the same party, and the two hosts should not be in the same apartment.
Not only have they attracted difficult and frequently unpleasant people to themselves as friends, but now all of those friends are supposed to mix in one room.
Hey, I know it'd be fun.
And here's the thing.
Let's create a metaphor for how terrible our relationship is.
They learn nothing from this encounter. The party is over. They laugh about what an awful party it was and how everyone is terrible and how they all have terrible friends. And they learn nothing.
Yeah.
And they just forge ahead.
Hey, guys, what do all these terrible people have in common? They're your friends.
And the reason I say that it's like a horror movie is because, well, there's stuff that's coming that I won't spoil. But it's a trap.
Yeah. It is the kind of thing where it is the emotional equivalent of like, no, don't go in the basement.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and the film creates that tension, that worry begins to sneak in to, you know, your own reaction.
Right.
And as the stress of their lives together mounts, it does function like a horror film. It's like a thriller almost, where you think, oh God, like this is not, please, can what I worry about what's coming not happen, please? But, you know.
It inevitably does.
Then it does.
I also want to mention, you know, this is a film that is very sexual and uses those scenes in a way that builds character, underscores the plot and the story and all this other stuff. And we get movies like this all too rarely. You know, it is much easier to get an R rating if you are super violent than if you are, you know, like remotely sexual.
Right.
You know, there are all these sort of walls in place in certainly in American movie making, but in general, they kind of prevent films like this from getting made. Certainly for performers, a lot of them, and I totally get it, the internet is out there, this stuff will follow you forever, are very reticent about doing nudity.
Right.
Sebastian Stan, Denise Goff, both very open to it.
They're like, let's go.
Yeah, they commit to this whole thing. Denise Goff, I wasn't super aware of her, but she played...
Neither was I.
She played Hannah Pitts in the recent National Theater and Broadway revival of Angels in America. And apparently, like, won awards and, like, a lauded performance. I would like to go back and... I think that might be on, like, it was on pay-per-view or something. I'd like to see it. But she's really quite good in this. And, you know, Sebastian Stan, you know, if you've only been seeing him as the Winter Soldier, this is definitely a different kind of role for him. And it offers, you know, he gets to go in different directions and explore different, you know, avenues. I really enjoyed this film, and, mm-hmm. and it was not at all what I was expecting it to be.
No, it begins and you're thinking, more, you know, going back to the original statement, more attractive straight people being reckless without consequences.
Right. And then the consequences show up.
But then the consequences show up. Yeah.
So it is streaming and in theaters. Mm.
It's advertising time.
Mm.
The juiciest chicken breasts. Serve these with a bright vinaigrette. That's the wrong email.
A bright vinaigrette?
A bright vinaigrette.
Okay. What makes a vinaigrette bright?
Well, if I click through, I could tell you, but I'm not going to do that. Instead, right. I'm going to click through the other email.
Save that for our food.
That says
podcast.
Amber Petty ad copy, yes. 419.
Yes.
Did you know? Lots of people think you need a fancy journalism degree or powerful literary friends to be a successful freelance writer. Not true. Just need some gumption.
Ooh. Moxie.
I added that word to the ad copy. Okay, yeah. You just need to know where to start and hopefully not spend 10 hours Googling random writing advice. To help you get started, go to Amber Petty's free workshop. The name of that workshop is 3 Key Steps to Becoming a Freelance Writer. In 60 minutes, you will go from, this seems impossible, to, oh wow, Amber is not fancy at all, and she made a living doing this. I can too. The very last workshops are this Tuesday. That's tomorrow.
If you're listening to this right when we drop.
If you're listening to this right when we drop.
April 20th.
On the 19th, then April 20th, Tuesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Pacific. It means if you're an East Coaster, you're going to stay up a little later. Or you can come to the Start Writing Session, where Amber will help you brainstorm ideas, find places to pitch, and lead you through writing exercises to get you past the blank page. Sign up for either free workshop at amberpetty.com/linoleum. That is, again, one more time, amberpetty.com/linoleum.
And I'll have that link in the show notes as well.
Yes. Thank you for being an advertiser, Amber Petty.
Yes. You're fancy to us in the good way.
Right. It's true. Hey, guess what?
What?
There is a super incredible documentary happening.
About making your vinaigrette bright?
No. Okay. About making a film.
Ah.
And usually, I tend to shy away from those because... It seems like nerd nonsense.
A little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest man.
But my beloved Grasshopper, distributors.
This sounds like a movie that was created in a lab for Dave White and Dave White only.
Not just for me. But
okay, you and Richard Brody.
Not just for me and Richard Brody, whom I have never met, but for everyone, including you, Alonzo Duralde. No, don't. What's the word I'm looking for?
Dismiss.
Don't talk back to me ever again for the rest of your life.
Yeah, good luck with that.
No back talk, please.
All right, pitch me.
Okay, so I'm here to tell you that the best film of 2021... is a film from 2001. It is 20 years old, this film that I'm about to tell you about. But there is a 2-week streaming window taking place right now on projector.tv. That's Grasshopper's virtual cinema site where you can stream a lot of stuff that they've got. And everything from Grasshopper is good. Everything. I've never been disappointed or bored by something that I've seen distributed by Grasshopper in a movie theater or in the past year through their virtual cinema. One of the things that I watched last year on Grasshopper's virtual cinema called projector.tv, I'm going to spell it for you, P-R-O-J-E-C-T-R, like grinder, like growler, but not like scruff.
No.
Projector.tv.
Yes.
One of the things I watched last year was a restoration of a film by Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillet called Cecilia! Exclamation point. Y'all know that you've been listening here for a while, I'm sure. So y'all know that the past several years I have been digging into the film, the filmography of Straub and Huillet. And it's been, I won't lie, it's been sometimes a challenge because these two, they were a couple. They worked together from the 50s until she died in 2006. He's still alive. He's 88 years old, still making movies. We reviewed his last year. He put out a short film called mm-hmm. France Against the Robots.
Yes.
A 10-minute movie. We reviewed it here. But one of the things I watched last year was the restoration of Cecilia, a film that came out in 1999 from them. And it was unlike, well, not unlike, but less so than a lot of the other films I've seen by them. More accessible and less intensely demanding. And so when I came to you about it, I said, wait. I have the Straub Huillet film that you, Alonso de Raude, will watch and not be like, what's happening? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's first of all, it's fantastic. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so few of their films, to me anyway, have been funny. Maybe some of them are meant to be comedies, but I've, you know. And so if you go back and listen to the episode, you'll hear me talk about Cecilia. Well, what was happening before Cecilia made its way into the world of film festivals and museums, you know, not often actual cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
Portuguese filmmaker Pedro Costa was simultaneously making a documentary about the editing process of Cecilia. The name of this film, the one that I'm about to talk about, is called Where Does Your Hidden Smile Lie? And if you know anything about Pedro Costa, you know that he sure does love darkness and shadow and things happening in, you know, a sort of gorgeously composed play between darkness and lightness. Well, you know, what luck. This entire movie is set inside an editing bay where the only light comes from the screen itself, where they are, you know, running, you know, film through the editing machine, and the crack door, the door to the room opened up so that Jean-Marie Straub can wander in and out smoking a cigarette, telling Daniel Huillet what to do. And you would think that that might not be 100 minutes worth of engagement, but oh my God, it so very much is. Look, they have this sort of ongoing, I don't want to call it an argument because it's so loving and so, you know, so much about them working toward the same goal that when she tells him repeatedly, shut up, leave me alone, shut up, leave me alone, You all you can hear is how much they love each other.
So they're us.
No. We are not fit to carry their luggage.
I see.
They are amazing artists. We are, you know, film critics with a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens is Danielle Huillier is working on the edits, and every frame of this movie that they're working on, Cecilia, is up for debate. Do you like his eyebrow? Hey, there's a butterfly. Do we want that? This palm tree is annoying me. He uses this opportunity to try to micromanage her, right? Sort of lecturing the air, because she already knows everything that he thinks, but he's got a camera on him and he knows he does. So he's delivering a film course, right? And he's saying, you know, well, you know, we are like sculptors in that we take the material and we have an idea and we have to marry the idea and the material and make the form. And the form is where the meaning is going to come from. He goes on and on about this. And finally, she says things like, are you done? Have you calmed down? And he's like, I'm always calm.
It is worth noting they are both credited as the editors of Cecilia.
Yes, and they're both credited as the directors. They worked so inextricably linked that in spite of the fact that earlier film academics and people who wrote about them would credit him as the director,
you don't say.
Ignoring her, the fact was, and they never made any, you know, indication to the contrary, that they were always a team. Writers, editors, directors, a team. The title comes from a moment where they're looking at a guy who's on a train and he's listening to another man, and there begins this conversation about, is there a smile forming in his eyes? And should we cut around that? Do we leave that in? Does it add to the meaning of what we're doing? And she, of course, is saying, will you shut up and let me concentrate? If a man were relying on you to jump, he wouldn't. And Strobe starts talking about an acrobat who needs blah, blah, blah. And she says, the acrobat would be dead. He starts talking about, you know, stupid mistakes they've made. And she says, we've done enough stupid things. Let's not imagine others that we might do. It is like watching, like, the most intellectually rigorous Tracy and Hepburn try to edit a movie together. He mentions how he says his idea is that he doesn't care about matching shots. In the meanwhile, she's trying to do a matching shot. And he says, matching shots are the most idiotic thing in film history. And if we do this, it will give rise to the suspicion that we had a script girl. We have never.
Perish forbid.
And she agrees with him, right? She just wants to be left alone to do her work. Because their whole thing over the course of their career, and I say their whole thing, not having seen everything they've ever made, obviously, I'm still learning about them. I am currently what I would call sort of an autodidact student of their films, reading what I can, seeing what I can, where I can. But one of their deals was that, you know, mimicking reality was not possible. Very Bressonian in that way. So their thought was, it's better to remain abstract and modern. And so quite often when their films would be, you know, in the editing process, they would take out so much that you, the audience, would have to make some leaps to sort of keep going with their story. He says in the film, you know, editing is about renouncing things. It's about concentrating stuff. And in time, you wind up with more than you would have if you had left in all this, you know, extraneous material. I love them so much. And because this is a Pedro Costa film, you know, you never forget that you're in his hands, because his thing is, he's always serving you major composition. Like, there is, the camera doesn't often move. People move within the frame. The light shifts and, you know, comes and goes. You see them in real light facing the camera twice. Their back is to you, or they are in silhouette. So it's beautiful to look at. It's fascinating to hear their ideas about editing. It helps you understand their films better than if you just came to them cold. It is an incredible film, and it, you heard me watching it with the headphones on. I laughed throughout the entire thing because of the way these two communicate with each other in this very, you know, other people might consider it to be, this is a married couple, they're being a little rude to each other, but you can feel how connected they are and how deeply in love they are.
Do you have to have seen Cecilia first?
No.
Okay.
The only reason seeing Cecilia first would be helpful is so that when they are showing you the stuff that's being edited, you would be like, oh yeah, I remember that part, and now I see why they did this thing that they did. But you could watch them out of order. You could watch this and then go watch Cecilia. They are both on Projector, the Grasshopper site, projector.tv.
Speaking of Projector,
I love it so much.
This movie is 20 years old, but they are still editing film. Like, she's sitting at like a Steenbeck or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's oldie timey for some folks, but
yeah, it was 1999,
or
98, when they were editing, and they stayed committed.
Avids were new, and a lot of people weren't using them yet. And,
you
know.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys, y'all, watch this movie, and then go watch Cecilia. Like, if you've never seen a Strobe Guillet film, this is your door into them, I think.
Okay, Dave.
Alonzo.
Dave, okay.
Alonzo. Oh, I will not stop hounding you until you watch this with me. I'll watch it again.
Yeah, that's great.
Then we're going to watch Vitalina Varela, because you ain't seen that yet either. Oh, how I am going to make you sit down and watch them.
Oh, the movies that I've been trying to make you watch as well. Yeah, so no, you can just slow your
dutifully roll. I have obeyed many times.
Rarely.
No. That's not a fact. That is not a fact. I watch more stuff that you demand I watch than vice versa.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Because your stuff is just...
No. I don't care what word is fixing to come out of your mouth. You are wrong. I'm telling you about life-giving cinema.
Uh-huh.
You see.
Broccoli. You're giving me broccoli.
Wrong.
All right.
Take that word out of your mouth.
We'll see.
And put it on a plate with garlic and butter. Blanched ever so lightly.
Yes. Keep it crisp.
To keep it crisp. And then what is broccoli in that context? Delicious. So, okay. Yeah, broccoli. Delicious broccoli.
This is as close as you've come to ever making Strobe Guillet movies sound remotely my jam.
I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you facts.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone listening, I'm telling you the same thing.
Okay. Dave's telling us, everybody.
I'm telling you. I'm not mansplaining you. I'm Dave Whitesplaining you. That's a whole different thing.
Not much better.
Oh, it's much better.
There was something else.
Jacob's wife. Travis Stevens.
Yes.
This is about a woman named Anne, played by horror legend Barbara Crampton,
mm-hmm.
married to a minister of a non-specific denomination, not Catholic, but he still wears the collar.
Yeah. The kind that can get married.
So I guess that's Episcopal, maybe Methodist, if you're, you know, fancy Methodists. Played by Larry Fessenden. And bad stuff is happening in their small town. It would appear that people are disappearing. No one seems to know why.
Sure are a lot of rats all of a sudden.
Sure are a lot of rats running around all of a sudden. And people who do disappear are descended upon by some sort of dark phantom that takes them away. Now, Anne, the wife, she wanted to do more in the world than just get married and move to a small town and
be a minister's wife.
Be a minister's wife. But she didn't do that. She decided to take this other path. Well, the phantom knows and comes for her and gets her. And then things start to change. I don't want to give away too many plot details because plot details are part of the fun of this. And if you can guess where it is going metaphorically, you are right. This is the story of a woman's liberation.
And empowerment.
And a story of a couple learning that they have to change for each other.
Yes.
So, like, I guess the what do they call them? The elevator pitch?
Yes.
What if couples therapy, but gore?
And so much gore.
So much amazing, wonderful, delightful, hilarious, nasty, goopy gore.
That it tips into comedy.
Yeah.
And intentionally so. Yep. And the movie has funny moments and also some scary moments.
Yeah.
But yeah, it really does wind up being this fascinating character study of Barbara Crampton as this woman who is given a second chance to sort of, you know, unleash her potential.
Like, my darling, I don't want to divorce you. But if you don't understand that I must become a creature of the night.
Yeah, this is who I am now.
We might have some problems to work out.
There's also a fun performance from Bonnie Ahrens. You know her as the nun in The Nun.
I didn't know that when I saw her on screen, because she's, again,
heavily made up,
dressed up like not a human being.
Yeah.
When I saw her, you said, "That's the nun," and I was like, "What, from the Jacques Rivette film? Which one?"
Dominica Nika Nika.
I was delighted every moment of this film.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's cheap. It's splattery. It's got stuff on its mind. It looks disgusting sometimes, and that's supposed to.
I was going to say, it looks intentional. Like, this is a low-budget movie, but they really make the most out of a handful of locations. There's a great grocery store sequence.
Yeah.
You know I love a grocery
store
sequence.
You really
do. Yeah. Like everything in this movie, you can tell they're not working with a lot, but they are. It's all very planned, and it all looks, you know, intentional, I guess is the word I can for this. It's smart and it's funny.
Jacob with a K.
Yes.
Yeah. I completely recommend this. I didn't really want to sit down and watch it because you've been slogging me through some real, you know, run of the mill boring horror movies lately.
And
I need something other than cheap jump scares that do not scare me ever.
No, agreed.
And very few things actually scare me when it comes to horror because I've just seen so much now over the course of my life.
Right.
That I need other stuff from horror. And this gives me some of that other stuff. Wit and wonderful practical effects.
Yeah.
And, you know,
an interesting central
strange
metaphor.
Strange performances, an interesting, you know, subtext. Yeah. So I'm very happy about this.
Yeah. I no shade on people who love horror. It's never been my thing.
Thank you for not shading me. I love horror.
I know. And lots of people I adore do. But yeah. It's never really been my thing. But yeah, I had a very good time watching this movie. It is in theaters and it is streaming. And it might be also on Shudder, or if not, it's heading there. But yeah, it's out there and you should check it out, even if, like me, you are not a horror person.
Finally, I finally sat down and watched Shiva Baby.
Oh, good. Okay.
From Emma Seligman. Is this her first film?
It is her first feature. Yes.
Her first feature?
She did a Shiva Baby short that I think this was based on.
All right. Okay. So, there's a Shiva and there's a baby. And neither of those things is exactly what this is about.
Not exactly, no.
An actress I don't really know named Rachel Sennett.
Yes.
Plays a college-aged bisexual woman who is... Now, I'm going to try to explain this with some brevity, although it's difficult.
Yeah.
So much is going on in this movie. She is having a secret rendezvous regular with a guy. We don't really know anything about him, except that he has money, and he gives her money.
He's a little older.
He's like in his 30s.
Yeah.
And she's like 20.
20-ish, yeah.
And he gives her money. So we aren't quite sure if this is a, you know, old school sugar daddy setup, or if she is simply, you know, doing temporary sex work, or if she's really into him. What she doesn't know about him is that he is married. She finds that out at the Shiva when his wife, Diana Agron from Glee, shows up with their crying baby.
Yes. She doesn't know about the wife. She doesn't know about the child. She also doesn't know that her parents know this guy.
Yeah.
He used to work for her dad.
Right.
Who is played by Fred Melamed.
So the parents are there. One of the parents is Molly Draper.
Polly Draper.
Sorry. Polly Draper from 30-something. So is Danielle's ex-girlfriend, played by Molly, not Polly, right. Gordon.
From Booksmart.
From Booksmart. And there are also like 24 other guests at this Shiva. The dead person is irrelevant. It's just an excuse to get all these people in one location and chaos to ensue.
Yes, because Danielle has been, you know, as far as her parents know, she is in college and, you know, and of course she...
Studying,
yeah.
Building her own major.
Exactly.
In gender studies.
They're a little vague on it, and clearly, like, different people have been told different stories, and, you know, she's I guess, maybe getting to that age where she should be almost finished, so, like, what are you going to do next, and what have you got lined up?
And everybody's putting pressure on her.
Exactly, you know, and the ex is, of course, you know, like, going to med school or something. She's
right.
Some sort
she's
of
going to law school.
Law school. She's she's an exemplar, you know.
Right.
And so yeah, all of these sort of like conflicting narratives of this one woman's young woman's life come crashing together at this event.
And she's not equipped to deal with the stories that she has concocted.
Right.
And has told many people in the same room, all of whom are not afraid to just speak up about these stories, in spite of how they conflict.
Really? I thought you were blah, 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 blah.
She is a mess.
Yes.
And I'm just really happy that there is a messy bisexual representation in this film. And that it is a story of a young woman who not only doesn't have some things together, she doesn't have anything together. And what it understands is that when you are in your early 20s, you don't really have everything together.
Right.
But it would be better for you if you could keep your stories straight between the people that you are, you know, telling the stories to. So the comedy in this film, and it's really funny, is about how do I analogize this? Like someone stacking teacups precariously on top of each other on a table that's wobbly, because as more and more people speak to each other and intentionally try to mess with each other. No one in this movie, no character in this movie is saying, you know what, I'm just going to be quiet and back out of the conversation. No, they actually step further into the conversation and intentionally try to put more wrenches into it to expose whoever it is that they happen to be angry at in the scene. And there are lots of angry people in this particular Shiva.
Somebody I know said they had to turn this off midway through because no movie since Uncut Gems had made them this uncomfortable. And I get that because it is not just where like you got these, she's trying to keep these conflicting stories straight. She's trying to like explain things to people so they'll stop bugging her about it. But like you feel the sweat of everybody packed into this house.
Yeah.
It's that thing that William Friedkin brought to the stage, to the screen versions of Bug.
Right.
And what's the one with Matthew McConaughey as the killer? Something Jack.
I'm forgetting the title of it, but I know exactly
Cactus
which
Jack,
one.
Texas Jack, whatever.
I know exactly which one you're talking about, and I have blanked on the name myself.
Like,
keep going.
It's what was missing from the movie version of August Osage County.
Not that people are literally sweating, but they are so filled with nervous tension.
Yeah.
And you wonder why everybody wants to just keep digging into each other, and you realize that there's not really a reason. It's just that, you know, everyone wants to be right. Everyone wants to be proven right about the person that they're sort of trying to needle.
I recognize a lot of the Spanish immigrant experience in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like my parents' friends getting together and a similar lack of filter, let's call it, when it comes to certain things.
Yeah.
I imagine that Emma Seligman is dealing with a very specific group of people here, and that this is the way they interact,
right?
You know, or at least this is her perception of how they interact at events like this. So I think it is, let's call this non-WASP theater.
Okay.
Like the people who don't go out of their way to make the other person, you know, like paper over a faux pas or feel better about a thing. No.
It's the opposite of ordinary people where everyone is repressed and quiet.
Exactly. It's the, let's dig into this for a while because I had heard X and now you're telling me Y.
Right.
Didn't you say X? Because she's saying Y. Yeah, it's a lot of that.
It's about 80 minutes long.
Yeah.
And you'll be glad.
At the end
that
of it
only puts you through. Because you feel tired when it's over. But it's very funny. The overlapping human interaction and dialogue is great. The camera never stops moving in that Sierra Nevada way. There's a Romanian film that we watched a couple years ago where
a lot of people in a small
living environment who are all, and the camera just follows them around and around and around the place. Now, one side issue related to this is that a good friend of mine, ours, came to me, and this friend is Jewish, and he said, "I'm angry about this film." And I said, "Please tell me why." And he said, Jewish people were not cast as Jewish characters. And I said, I did not know that. You know, so many of the cast, I don't really know much about them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned was, in fact, Rachel Sennett, who plays the lead, who plays Danielle, she is not Jewish. Diana Agron from Glee, who plays the one non-Jewish person in the movie, she is Jewish.
Right.
And the filmmaker, of course, Emma Seligman, she's Jewish. And so, you know, he and I had this conversation and I was like, you know, it's weird. You know, sometimes I don't know how often, you know, a film like this, I don't know how casting happens. It's a small, you know, independent film.
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume that, you know, Rachel Sennett came with, you know, Emma Seligman's approval.
Well, yeah.
So I don't really know what to tell you other than I get it, because sometimes if I'm watching a queer film and it's written and directed by, you know, a queer person and they cast straight people in queer roles, I think,
did you have to?
Why did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't offend me. It doesn't bother me because I know that, again, casting is a process that I don't know enough about to have you know, definitive opinions on.
Sure.
But I do know that it made him unhappy. He said, like, this doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like this was the right move. Hmm. And I said, have you seen the film yet? He's like, no, not yet. I was like, well, you know, I don't know the answer. All I'm saying is that he brought it up and it led to a conversation between us.
Sure.
And because you want representation from folks who are underrepresented.
Right.
And, you know, this is a very specifically Jewish setting in this film. You know, a shiva is a funeral. So the...
It's after
the funeral, yeah. So what do y'all think? Because I don't know the answer. You know, do we... ask for specific representation if the film is culturally specific?
I, for one, would feel weird telling, you know, a Jewish writer-director.
Oh, I'm not telling anybody anything. I'm not prescribing or dictating anything to anyone because I'm a critic. It's not my place.
I'll say this. Some of those performances by straight people in queer movies have been real good.
Have been really great.
Yeah. So,
you know, Heath Ledger was amazing.
Yeah.
In Brokeback Mountain.
Timothy Chalamet, you know.
Yeah. So.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer here is. But something to think about if this is a thing that might get in your way of enjoying the film.
Yes. Do you have a DVD recommendation?
I have a streaming pick.
Yeah,
Somebody on Twitter was asking, you know, just one of those goofy meme things, you know, post a still from a film that you unconditionally love that doesn't get talked about nearly enough.
Mm.
And I posted a still from the 1988 comedy Some Girls.
Yeah.
Starring Patrick Dempsey and Jennifer Connelly, right. Which I'm a huge fan of. And I feel like it just has always sort of fallen between the cracks. And I just happened to look it up to see where it might be streaming, and it's on Tubi.
Oh, yeah?
So go see Some Girls. Go watch it. I think it's a really charming comedy.
You know, the film we watched the other night on Tubi,
mm-hmm.
The original Airport.
Yes.
Y'all should see it.
Yeah, I was shocked at how well it holds up.
Cool soap opera in a plane that's got a bomb on it.
Yeah, like you would think that after Airplane, it would be impossible to take these kinds of movies seriously.
Right.
But there's some good performances in there.
Right.
The set design and everything, that late 60s, early 70s, the way the outfits were, you know, the stewardess uniforms.
The Edith Head costumes. In this movie are amazing. Saint Jean Seberg is in this film.
With her big swoopy hair. And the Alfred Newman score.
Is amazing.
Is dynamite.
It's still in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Airport on Tubi. And then if you're so inclined, 75, 77, and 79, they're all there.
Yeah. Also, do you remember when I talked about Where Does Your Hidden Smile Lie? Like 20 minutes ago?
That was, earlier this episode?
Right. Yeah, that's another streaming pick that I have this week for you because it's streaming, you see.
Yes, right.
On projector.tv.
Goes without saying, but you said it anyway.
I demand that all of you watch this film.
Hey, we have a Patreon.
We do.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Extra content in the form of LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast of the food, mm-hmm. Linoleum Nights, a podcast of, it depends on what we feel like talking about. Mm-hmm. Also, every so often, Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife, where we dig in deep on an older film, and a daily recommendation, LKRX. I need to do one for today, now that I think about it. It's my week.
I realized I only did like three last week. I'm going to double up with you this week and finish my Joan week.
Ah, good deal. Yeah. So anyway, you got that to look forward to. Anyway, all kinds of cool extra stuff. Club meetings, like the screening of Airport we just did with our members.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff. So check it out, won't you? Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
We got a letter from Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
He says, this week I listened to a previous show where you reviewed Stranger by the Lake from 2014. Hmm. It's still on the Criterion Channel through the end of April, so I thought I would start the film. Then maybe pause and take a break and finish later. I ended up watching nonstop and was riveted. I'm still thinking about the ending and the possible interpretations days later. Here are a few of my thoughts on the film. Number one, for me, the explicit gay sex didn't feel exploitive, but helped to establish the setting and mindset of the men who were cruising at the lake. The single location and purposefully repetitive structure of each new day at the lake ended up giving me time to consider each character's mindset and motivations in a way that a more plot-heavy film would have obscured. Number three, the total lack of music also drew me in, and that surprised me. Normally, I love a good film score, and I feel the lack of it, or jarring musical choices. Here, the lack of score drew me in further and totally worked to get me invested in the film. Thanks for letting me go on about this. There aren't too many places to discuss 7-year-old French gay thrillers / art films.
Welcome.
At Linoleum Knife Industries, that's our middle name.
I just remember how uncomfortable all the rocks looked.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone was lying on those rocks.
Yeah.
I'm like, is gay sex with strangers worth lying on a bunch of hot rocks all day?
Yeah.
I vote no.
Several towels.
You could be sitting on a nice couch somewhere.
Or bring a bring a folding chair.
Yeah, bring an umbrella.
Yeah.
A comfy something to lie on.
Air mattress.
People lying just bare-bodied on the rocks.
Yeah. And like, not like a big rock, like a bunch of little rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
France.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Victor says... Okay, this is old, but thank you for reviewing The Prom.
Hmm.
I didn't see it, but boy, did everyone on Twitter see it and get outraged. And when you guys pointed out that it is for babies, I just logged off Twitter for a peaceful moment because it wasn't worth feeling condescended to. You guys are smart. Secondly, I had this email drafted to beg you guys to talk about I Care a Lot because it was strange, but I hardly saw any buzz. I saw it... the opposite as John, John, John.
We had an earlier letter about the movie.
Okay. It was marked as an LGBTQ film, and I saw it not as a comedy, but as a thriller. I figured halfway through that Pike's character was not supposed to be liked because she is a critique of the girl boss.
Hmm.
But Dinklage at least loves his mom. Despite the trafficking? I personally have not seen this film. Have you seen it?
I have.
Okay. I decided they were just both bad and rooted for them to kill each other. Yes, the plot was preposterous. Yes, it was maybe too tender of a topic to satirize, at least without letting the mom have more lines or humanity. She was pretty miserable. I'm so glad you talked about it. I do think that in this system, anyone can become evil. And if we become apathetic... or complacent, we start hurting strangers for money. Genres are for the audience, not the writer. There's probably a lot of miscategorized movies where the tone is impossible when presented wrong.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think they were trying to sell it as a black comedy. And it's like, no, this is just bleak.
Yeah.
But that wasn't among my problems with the film.
Joshua, regarding the film Mafi.
Hmm.
Says, hey guys, South African here. I'm 26 years old, and I never had to fight in any war, thank God, but my dad was drafted and served as a lieutenant during the border war, as well as all of my friends' fathers who also fought in that war. Mafi is synonymous with the F-word gay slur.
Yes.
And was sadly ever present in the school playground.
Mm.
Yeah, you did say that it was the equivalent of that
slur.
It is
a slur, yes.
Yeah. So here we are just throwing the word around.
It's the title of the film.
Because, yeah. we won't say that word anymore because there are going to be probably no more films named that.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've been banned in Johannesburg.
And now we're finished and it's dinner time.
All righty then. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for listening. We do appreciate it. And why don't you go check out our friends on the internet, trying to think what podcasts I'm coming up on soon. Oh, I'm on
a lot of them.
I'm on Movies with Gravy right now, yeah, talking with Billy Ray Bruton about the Eric Rohmer Tales of the Four Seasons that have just been restored and are screening in virtual cinemas, and I imagine will be becoming a Criterion box set sometime soon. That was fun. And I also went on the Generation Splice podcast, a mother and son podcast where they talk about film from a generational point of view.
I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, no, it was a fun show. And, yeah, you know, he's a millennial and she's a boomer. And so I got to be the token Xer to come in.
You were
in,
the Gen X referee.
Yeah, to talk about Fight Club, which is a very Gen X kind of movie.
You refereed the Fight Club.
I did. And, you know, check out, yeah, the other shows that I do that Dave mentioned. We're very excited. We had Ben Mankiewicz on A Film and a Movie. We did, he's the one who turned us on to Brute Force.
Oh, God.
So good. So amazing. Anyway, but that's a fun episode, so check that out. And check out our friends and see what they're up to. Go to the Critically Acclaimed Network, see what Bibbs and Whitney got going on. Check out the Schmoes Know, Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review there. We'll read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, TheLounge.com, Stitcher Radio, Amazon Music, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, and the like. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. See what he's up to at bandcamp.com/BLEU. That is it.
Yeah.
We'll be around next time for more. Until then.
Oh, wait. We might not be around next time
for more. Oh, that's true.
Here's what's going on. Today is April 19th.
Yes.
Our second Moderna shot is happening this Saturday, the 24th.
Yes.
There might not be a linoleum night.
we might be taking a week off.
We might be coming at you significantly later, depending on
how it all goes.
If we have side effects or not, if we are flat on our backs for a day or two, who knows? Mm. So we will keep you posted on the Facebook page
and on Twitter
and Patreon, and let y'all know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But don't expect this show coming up this weekend or whenever, this Monday.
You know what? It's Oscar weekend. I think the only thing that's opening that's remotely big is Mortal Kombat.
So, all right.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
There may not be one happening
because
of shots.
Letting you know up front.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
Goodbye.